Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the program Trevor Honeycutt. He is a reporter, Investment News. I started to say an investment reporter. He covers a lot of areas, and he is with Investment News, and I like Investment News because they really keep track of a lot of things happening in the investment world. Investmentnews.com. I'm a little wired and wound this morning because I'm excited to be with Trevor. He's a returning guest. He does a great job of covering all things Wall Street and a lot of interesting areas, and he has done a lot of work, been with the reporter for Investment News, also a freelance reporter, editor, writer, researcher for numerous outlets, including AP, San Francisco Chronicle, Reuters. He has a Master's of Science, International Relations from London School of Economics and Political Science, and so he's got an interesting take and perspective. So, Trevor, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Really delighted to have you back, and there's so much to get to. I was joking with Trevor. We got about 7 hours of program to cram into 27 minutes. Trevor has a number of recent articles he's written that I want to talk about with him, and we'll go and hit a couple of these, Trevor. I know they're all fresh in your mind still for the last couple of months, and a couple things that may be some trends that people may not have picked up on that I think would be great to talk about. The first one is you've noted this, and you wrote about it, that investors are shunning or kind of moving out of the stock pickers, if you will, the funds and such, and moving more in favor of Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street, and the like. Now, can you give us some insight into what's happening and why you think that is? Is it because of the nature of the market, or maybe some just not enough belief in the ability of the stock pickers to outpick the market? What's happening? Do tell. We're excited to hear about it.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a combination of factors. People are starting to realize that the market that we're in right now has been particularly tough for people who do whose bread and butter is to pick which stock is going to go up in value, which stock is going to go down in value. It's been very hard to do that, and so most fund managers who do pick stocks, they have not been able to beat broad market benchmarks like the S&P 500. And so what's happened is people have looked more and more for index funds that have kind of lower fees attached to them and can sometimes deliver better performance. And so that's what's happening. People are looking very closely at what is my performance after taxes, after fees, and what kind of product set can I use to access this, we've been in several years of rising markets, so how do I access that best and cheaply?
So it's a little bit, then, I think I'm hearing you say, it's a little bit of, if you can't beat them, join them.
Yes, exactly.
Right? I mean, it's tough to beat a rising market when you got if you buy a spider or some other, simple ETF, you got all of the upside potential, you've got very little cost, and you get the dividend. That's kind of tough to beat.
It's very difficult to beat.
I have to caveat that in a rising market, because the flip side or devil's advocacy position, as you know, Trevor, is that that's all well and good as long as we keep pumping air into the balloon. But if we see a turnaround, then being lockstep, latched to, and buckled to the market in that kind of unrestrained position, but being right there with it, can turn around and really come back and hit you hard, which is of course the case for active management.
That's right, and there's definitely a lot of companies that are making that argument right now, that you need to be thinking about the risks that come with being an index fund, especially after we've been in this bull market that's gone on for several years, so companies like PIMCO, like American Funds, they've tried to kind of flip that argument.
Well, and they're the kind of glasses half full, half empty approach here, and this is what we do. Just to give our listeners an example, Trevor, what we're doing is we've already incorporated both ETFs as kind of a core holding in our portfolios, but then we layer around that both on the international as well as the domestic side. We layer in these actively managed, no load, low cost funds to really kind of hedge our bets, because going all in one way or the other, just may put you in the wrong place.
And the other thing that I would say, is that the trends that we're talking about are really just starting to pick up. And there, you know, there's still, you know, it's still a $15, $20 trillion market for active management when you look at mutual funds, when you look at hedge funds. So there is still huge demand for those kinds of products. But what we're looking at is where is the money started to go? And when it comes to U.S. stocks, that's where we've seen this huge trend of and movement towards index funds.
Well, and that's excellent observation, Trevor. And you know, it's interesting. There's still a lot of folks out there that may have a very concentrated portfolio. I just met with a person the other day that had all of their retirement money in one stock. And so, I mean, we're talking about, you know, going from an A- to an A+ in terms of our diversification. Somebody already who is, you know, so far out of the diversification game, you know, we don't want to overlook and comment on that. This is all about getting, you know, just trimming and adjusting the portfolios to really make the most. And you said also earlier, which is a real big deal, and we're seeing this come up in another subject I want to get to, which is the cost. You know, you knock out 1% portfolio cost over a 10-year period, you're talking about a lot of money.
It's very substantial. And when people are looking to, you know, the capital markets to give them, you know, capital appreciation and to give them more money over time, it's extremely difficult to overestimate the impact of fees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when, you know, an average market return might be 6%, it might be less, it might be more. You know, every penny counts.
Well, and you know, it's really surprising, and I shouldn't be surprised. I've done this for a long time, Trevor. I mean, I'm looking at 20 years in doing financial work, but I still am surprised with the number of people that have no idea what their fees are. And, you know, you talk about a return of, you know, being in the, I tell people, look, let's have an expectation for maybe 7% returns average. It's not guaranteed. Some years it's going to be 14, some years it's going to be 0, 21, right, negative 7. But let's shoot for something realistic. And if you look at somebody who's paying 2, 3, or more percent a year and have no idea, you're talking about, that could be 50% of the returns.
Huge.
Well, this is something that hasn't escaped the Labor Department and the regulators in general, and it is something they're looking at for the folks, the advisors that are involved with 401k and retirement plans. So we'll grab a quick break. We'll come back and talk to Trevor about his recent article on that subject from April 17th. Quick break. We'll be right back with Trevor.
When it comes to finding a financial advisor you can trust, do you know the right questions to ask? David Holland has written a popular book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy. Or if you want to meet one-on-one with David to talk about your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book with no cost, no obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back with Trevor Honeycutt, investment news reporter and a fine guest. And we're glad to have him back. In fact, I even invited Trevor to come back on a regular basis because he's one of our favorite guests, to be honest with you. And I want to get your input with all that buildup, Trevor, of your opinion on the Labor Department's fiduciary proposal. If you can summarize it in a nutshell for our listeners, you know, why should they care? What does it matter? And how? And I know this is still out there. It's not "quote unquote" law, but it's being proposed, and there's going to be a lot of debate and discussion about it. But what's going on here with this agency initiative?
So what's happening more broadly in Washington right now is regulators, you know, from the Department of Labor to the Securities and Exchange Commission, what they're looking at is the kinds of standards under which financial advisors need to operate with their clients. So do financial advisors have to operate with the highest standard of care, meaning always putting the client ahead of their own, or not, basically? And what you have right now is a system where there are all different kinds of standards that are held, that advisors, different kinds of advisors are held to. There's a lot of confusion in the marketplace.
Sure.
And people get paid in all different kinds of ways. And so what the Department of Labor has tried to do, they believe that fact, that conflicts of interest in terms of financial advice cost investors and retirement savers a lot of money. And so what they've tried to do is create kind of clearer standards around the standards that advisors will be held to. And in the context of retirement plans, what they've said, what they've proposed, is that all financial advisors be held to a high standard, while also allowing them to kind of do business in some of the same ways they do, and get paid in some of the same ways that they do right now.
So the big fuss, the biggest or the bigger fuss is the 401ks and things like that, where the advisor is advising the quote-unquote the plan sponsor. In other words, they've sold the plan to the plan sponsor, who is the employer, to make available for the employees. And the employees really, there's not really a level of responsibility on the part of that advisor to do what's best for that plan participant, the employee putting money away out of their hard-earned paycheck. And so these standards that they're proposing are to, you know, really raise the bar of level of responsibility to that participant. Because I've had people come in all the time, Trevor, that they have a 401k at work and they go, you know, I get no advice. I don't know who the advisor is. And, you know, maybe the advisor's a golfing buddy of the employer. It's just, there's just no connection. Yeah, we do a group meeting. Thank you very much. You know, but there's not really any standard of care. And so I think that's the first step in this. But this is also intended to really shine a light on how different advisors work, and because, you know, not every advisor is held, as you said, to the same level of care for the person that they're advising. And, you know, it's not necessarily what's best for the person. It may be that the advisor works for a company and that company says, here are the things you can recommend, and those things may or may not be best for the client.
That's right, and I think that's the concern that they're trying to address, that maybe conflicts of interest are causing advisors to recommend products that may be too high in fees, and may ultimately be costing people who are saving for their retirement a lot of money.
Well, not to put it too bluntly, but there's a lot of financial people that if they are employed by a particular firm, that firm says, here's the list of things you can recommend to our clients, your clients, the clients of the firm. They're W-2 employees. They're told what to do, and they got to sell what's on the truck.
That's right.
I mean, there's
no
other way of putting it. That's just the reality of an employee-employer relationship. And as opposed to that investor hiring somebody to work for them and do what's best for them in a fiduciary relationship, do you really, this is kind of, I'm putting this as kind of, do you really think, and I don't want to make it sound too strong, Trevor, but do you, because I'm not sure I believe this, do you really think that there's going to be any type of new regulation that's going to hold all brokers and other related advisors to a standard of care that is that high?
You know, there are so many moving parts right now.
Yeah.
And I think you've got the industry itself, which has made the argument that, look, you know, sometimes, you know, people get paid in all different kinds of ways in this industry. And, you know, it's just because someone's getting paid by the manufacturer of the investment product instead of by the client, that doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that the advice that they're giving is bad. And so that's the Department of Labor has tried to kind of incorporate that into their
right.
proposal, which I think probably gives it a stronger chance of being passed because it will have less industry opposition.
Mm-hmm.
But it still kind of remains to be seen what the industry will think, what the politics in Washington will be like. And I wouldn't bet on anything happening or not happening
right.
in Washington at this moment.
Well, you know, not to play too much of an armchair quarterback, but from my vantage point, Trevor, of actually doing this every day, working with people, I can tell you a really, really simple solution that'll make this just be so much easier and quicker to resolve. Require all financial advisors, no matter what capacity they're working in, fiduciary, suitability standard, insurance agent, everybody, to disclose in writing prior to the time of the transaction or sale or starting of the relationship, be that whatever it is, to disclose in writing all fees and commissions and compensation that advisor will receive, and let the free market decide. Because when somebody sees that they're paying 3.5% or 4% a year for a variable annuity, they're going to say, whoa, wait a minute.
Right. And when you look at all of the regulators and what they're doing right now, whether it's the Department of Labor, whether it's the SEC, whether it's FINRA, which is another organization that has a role here. All of them are pushing in the direction of having more transparency, more disclosure in terms of what people are paying, why, and to whom. The question is just whether people will read those disclosures.
Well said. Trevor Honeycutt, ladies and gentlemen, reporter for Investment News, investmentnews.com. Go to the website. You can see all of Trevor's articles and stay on top of the great input he's giving us. We're going to grab a quick break, come back. I want to talk about money market funds a little bit, Trevor, and the liquidity and the interest rates and what's happening there. Stay tuned, folks.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialists, and certified annuity specialists. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and individualized attention to each and every one of our clients. Count on Holland Financial for your financial advice, not only for today, but for many years to come. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back with Trevor Honeycutt, investment news reporter, investmentnews.com. Great stuff, timely discussion. And I got to get to this because it affects so many people, Trevor. We're seeing some additional rumblings coming out of the money market fund area. So what's going on? We have continued low interest rates and we have issues of liquidity. Are the money market funds going to be able to sustain, at least until rates start to go up? Are they going to be able to sustain that stable value and have people be able to get to their money if they need to? What's happening in this area?
Well, that's right. And you know what people are really concerned about is what do I do with my cash? The cash that comes, from my investments that maybe it's not ready to be invested. How do I keep that safe? People have been dealing with a lot of issues when it comes to where to keep their cash, because we've been in such a low yield environment right now, where people will put their money in money market funds, not see a whole lot in terms of return on that money.
Right.
It's been a very difficult time, and that in addition to some regulatory changes has caused people to consider basically other alternatives to money market funds and to rethink how much risk there is in these funds, which people use like bank accounts, but we have to remember are investment products and are exposed to some level of market risk.
I think most people completely miss that fact. I mean, I don't think that many people know that, Trevor, that, you are, even though it's a money market fund and the bank offers a money market, that therein lies the confusion. It's not the same. And if you really are going to hold a big chunk of cash, then it ought not to be in your brokerage account because you do have a risk. And if it's a large chunk and we see some of these funds, if they're not able to sustain that stable, dollar per share kind of value, then you could incur a loss from a very place where you least expect it to occur. So, now if we're talking about an IRA or something like that, that may be a different animal. But if it's just sitting in the brokerage account and you're going to hold it there long term, maybe we should look at something else.
That's right. And it's important for people to remember that, unlike bank accounts, money market funds are not, they're not insured by the government. And so you are exposed to some level of risk. And that's kind of what the SEC was looking at when they proposed reforms. Those reforms go into effect next year, and they're going to change the character of some money market funds over the next year.
Okay. Well, speaking of funds that are having a little bit of a, I'm not going to say a big challenge, but at least some question marks on the money market funds, and people need to be aware of that. What's been happening? I know you wrote about State Street closing some of their ETFs, the exchange traded funds. What are some of the larger trends we're seeing with exchange traded funds? They've obviously grown in popularity over the years by leaps and bounds, but why would somebody like a State Street, as big as they are, close some of their ETFs?
The bottom line is that there just wasn't demand for these particular products. Mm. The ETF market has been very popular. And overall, it's been very good to State Street, which is number three in that business, to Vanguard, number two, and to iShares from BlackRock, which is number one in terms of assets. But there are so many products that come out in this space, and some of them just aren't able to attract assets, and that's what happened in this particular case.
Well, the warning to investors is that if you are going to be in ETFs, again, these are securities, and the very definition of a security is it has risk of loss. And so one of the words of caution for the investor is to be careful about how small or how thinly traded the ETF is that they're going to invest in. If you know, in our portfolios, we're using the BlackRock ETF, Trevor, and you know, these the particular ETFs we're using, they are mammoth in size. They're huge. And we feel some comfort in the fact that we don't have a liquidity or, you know, potential blow up that could occur if an ETF is just, you know, not trade, it doesn't have the trading, doesn't have the volume, doesn't have the size, doesn't have the assets. So that's a word of caution, especially some of these newer ones that might come out from a less than brand name organization.
Absolutely. And with ETFs, you know, everything matters. It's not just the investment strategy. It's also the index. It's also the assets. It's also how do the things trade. So people need to make sure they're aware of all of those factors.
Well, and just to give a cute tongue-in-cheek example, you know, if you're going to invest in an ETF that is focused on small technology companies in Eastern Pakistan, okay, I mean, you know, look at how narrow you've made your market. I mean, you know, so you got to keep that in mind. You know, an ETF is wonderful for something like a, you know, S&P 500 or something like that. But I mean, just be careful not to get too tight on your parameters, because, you know, you could end up on the wrong side of that.
I'm putting all of my money in that one.
You like that one? Hey, you and I could roll that out later this year. You know, we could make a killing. I mean, there's got to be at least 8 or 9 people that would want to invest in that this year. Well, so what else is happening in the news that you say, hey, this stands out to me as a major event or trend? Anything really that's remarkable that you're writing about right now?
You know, I would say, you know, the big trends in the kind of investment industry is, somebody was saying yesterday from BlackRock, actually the head of iShares, Mark Weidman, he was saying, you know, industry trends in the investment business move at a glacial pace. So I would say that the big trends, you know, as we touched on, you know, where people kind of stand in terms of active and passive investing, how people, what's changing in the market, you know, the fact that for the last, you know, 6+ years, we've had a market that's gone up and up when it comes to U.S. stocks. But now we're starting to see, you know, that slow down a little bit. We're starting to see volatility creep back in. We're starting to see people concerned about how the changes in monetary policy with the Federal Reserve are going to affect industries differently. And so that's creating a lot of, you know, a lot of money that's moving around, and sectors are no longer moving in lockstep. Bond markets are you know, continuing to see yields go down.
Mm.
There's definitely a lot happening, but it just happens at maybe a slower pace than people think.
Fair enough. You know, in light of that increased volatility, even and it's increased from been very low. You know, one of the things that, and I'd love for you to basically, I'm going to ask you to back me up on this, Trevor, okay? I see these news headlines that come out. And of course, you know, if you've got a paper, you got to do something with all that ink. If you've got a 24/7 news program on television,
yeah,
you got to fill all the air. But the thing that drives me bonkers,
I know where you're going with this.
You know where I'm going? It drives me bonkers. In fact, I get on my soapbox, I see it over on the social media, and it's like, you know, stock market route, market off 50 points. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right.
It's not a route. It's not a correction. Give me a... Tell the listeners, because they hear me say it all the time. It's just, you've got to keep the perspective of what's really happening. Don't just look at these headlines.
I completely agree with you. And I'm a reporter, right? So every day my job is to find something novel, find something new.
Right.
To say every single day. But if you're a long-term investor, you know, frankly, a lot of that is going to be noise. And you know, what you have to do is you know, and what we have to do as reporters is to kind of bring out some of those long-term trends, and to figure out how, you know, what's new and what's novel fits into, you you know, something that actually makes sense for the long-term investor. So that's what we try to do.
Well, and I think that, you know, there's two pieces to it. And number one, if there really is a major market movement, then by all means, let's write about it, talk about it, and dig in and digest and who, what, when, where, how, why. But if it's a norm, you know, you've got just a normal market, I call it a heartbeat. You know, the market going up and down 1%, be that 1% on 18,000 on the Dow being 180 points, that's to me is just background noise. But when you've got some of this just hyperventilation over a 50-point movement, it's not even noise. They're actually, my point, Trevor, is that it's actually misleading investors and really just trying to grab somebody's attention. And the other thing I see is it depends on where the person sits. Some of it is very agenda driven. If somebody's got another product or something else that they're trying to push, I see this disingenuous, you know, less than honest representation about really what these market movements mean when they're so inconsequential.
Right, right. And unless you're, a day trader, those daily market movements don't mean that much.
And so the listeners, I'll tell them one more time, listen, ladies and gentlemen, a 1% movement is normal. The chest comes out, the chest goes in. That was a 1% movement for the stock market. It's alive. And we've got to expect it. And thankfully, we have Trevor Honeycutt over at Investment News. And go to the website, investmentnews.com, to follow all of Trevor's great writing. Trevor, I'm really delighted you're back. We'll have to do this on a more frequent and recurring basis.
I look forward to it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with me today. And we'll look forward to your continued writings, and stay tuned.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.